Good evening. At this time, we begin the segment on LIMAR. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey, and with K2 Kilowatt Echo Yankee Mel, we run this thing to help people out, to answer guys' questions. There's a lot to learn about ham radio. There's 25 or 26 different kinds of ham radio. So a group of semi-experts gather here and express their opinions about how things work, how to make them work better, how to better understand your transmission lines, your antennas, your transmitters, your receivers, your towers, your local government, when you want to put a tower up, all that kind of jazz. The questions that are appropriate for the TechNet are any subject of interest to radio amateurs, wireless interested people, electronic tinkerers in general. We occasionally get into things like high-definition television and pagers, things like this, 802.11, Wi-Fi. These are all wireless products, sometimes combined with computers, and therefore appropriate for this net. I'm a little light on computer technology, but we have other people that sign in from time to time that do cover that subject. And this repeater does have a group that I believe meets on Thursday night, I think it's once a month, on the subject of computers. A person signs into this particular technical net by giving Mel and Dick your call letters, your name, and follow that with a yes or a no, meaning you do have a question or a comment for the net. Do we have any check-ins at this time? Please give me your call letters and name. K2RIW.
M2, you're rich and yes. 2QYW.
Name is Joe.
And yes.
And I'm mobile.
Okay, so far we've got Rich, Joe, and Danny. Anyone else? Anyone else to check into the TechNet? Give me a call, let us a name at this time.
Yeah, good evening all. This is K2KEY.
And was that a yes or a no? Well, no, that was a joke. Okay. Rich is the first guy. And what's going on in Whitestone, Rich? M2, Echo Oscar, K2RIW.
Okay, good evening, Dick. K2RIW, TechNet Weimar. I see we're not in the net mode. M2EO. All right. Wanted to make an observation and a suggestion, Dick. Anybody interested in learning electronics, putting together a transmitter, a receiver? There are some wonderful products put out, and some T-bits, T as in Tango, like as in Tintec. They make something called a model 1340 CW URP transceiver. $99, you get a super heavy receiver with 4-pole crystal filter, 3 watts RF output, USK break-in keying, EFO with 50 kilohertz segment of your choice, you know, with a CW segment. They make them for 80, 40, 30, and 20 meters. Or a KB2VDV, who has never put a kit together, started building one of these 40-meter kits at my house today. She's doing quite well. This is somebody who's never handled resistors, capacitors, transistors, any components. And the way they break the kit up, they break it up into 7 phases. Phase 1 through 7, different portions of the PC board. So you finish one phase, and then they have you test it before you go on to the next phase. So if you have an error, you're not left building the whole thing and holding the bag wondering where the problem is. Anyway, she put together a 4-transistor regulator and keying circuit. There was one omission in the manual, and I made a mistake. But the keying circuit and the regulator circuit worked, and we're going to finish it up. So That's the story. I just wanted to, the 1340 is a 40-meter kit, but if you go on TENTEC.com and go to their, they make wired radios, a lot of good wired radios, but if you go to their section on kits on the web, you'll see these. They're $99. They're wonderful, wonderful kits for somebody who wants to get started in electronics, putting together something that you can really use. It's a very small cabinet. It's got its self-contained speaker. It uses a varactor diode with a pot for tuning the VFO. She built the regulator and Kia circuit this week, and next week she's going to build the varactor-tuned VFO. And then from then on, it's off to the receiver section and the transmitter section. At each section, you put together and check it out.
Nicely done. Tintec makes an awful nice product. I guess they're one of the very last remaining American manufacturers of ham radio equipment. If you had to list other manufacturers of ham radio equipment left in the United States, who else is left, to your knowledge, Rich? Go ahead.
Well, you've got Elecraft, ELECRAFT. They're making some nice equipment. And you've got, I always forget the name of the company making the software to find radios. I can never remember the name of that company. They make them for the government and they make them for amateur. Maybe somebody will come in and give us the name of that company.
Yeah, I don't remember that one either. Okay, so there's three. There used to be a zillion of them. Allied and, trying to think of some of the names now. Lafayette, Allied. I'm sure there was a, forgot the name. But, Elecraft and Tintec and the software-defined radio company. And software-defined radios were a major subject discussed at the microwave update in Philadelphia. I guess it was October of last year. And there, I think I told you, and the answer seemed to be that more than 50% of the radios we'll be using in 5 years will be software-defined. They see that much future in it. Sounds like pretty happy with that Tintec piece of equipment. That's a $99 kit in four phases. How did you get started on that one, Rich? How did you find out about that? And how did you, I guess you were Elmering somebody, and either you or they or someone else suggested to you this would be a good kit to build, 3 watts output, 40 meters, most likely novice assignment, and a good QRP rig. That combined with a good dipole should be a lot of fun to start operating CW. Back to you, Rich, for any other further comments. M2EL. K2RIW.
Okay, Dick. K2RIW, M2EO. I put one of these together for myself a number of years ago. And when she said she wanted to put together a kit, I thought of this because of the fact that it goes together in seven different phases, the assembly. And so that's a good thing for somebody who wants to learn. Also, each phase of assembly, they give you a technical description how it works. Go ahead, Dick.
Did you say Tintec, P-E-N-T-E-C, or Tintec, T-E-N-T-E-C?
Yes, Tintec, like the number 10. Tango, Echo, November, T-E-C. A darn good company in Tennessee. That's where the number comes. The name comes from Tennessee Technology, I guess you could say. That's where Tintec comes from. Tintec.com will allow you to get to the website where you can see this thing. And I've forgotten the name of it, and Rich, when I send it back to him, is going to tell us the actual name of this particular kit. And I'm guessing, and correct me on this one there, Rich, after you complete each one of those phases, they probably have you do a rudimentary measurement with a voltmeter or a Morse code key or whatever to confirm that particular phase was a successful assembly and is operating electronically. That's a guess on my part. I wonder if they did do that on at least some of those phases. M2EO, K2RIW.
Check-in.
Okay, we'll pick up the check-in, Dick, in a second. You can pick up the check-in. Yeah, well, Tintec, for the other station's information, What are the new guys don't know about Pentek? They've been around since 1969. They make a lot of wired equipment. They make a lot of fine radio equipment that some of the newcomers don't know about because they've been inundated with ads from the Far East. But, so this is, they make these kits for $99. They make a number, the monoband kits, they make them for 80, 40, 30, and 20 meters. This one that she bought is the model 1340. It's the 40 meter kit. And, yeah, Dick, what you said is correct. Each stage of the assembly, you test it out. So we tested the regulator today in the keying stage. Have you put a voltmeter on and read some voltage, help put a couple of wires together, see that you get 13 volts, release the wires, it should drop to zero, and it does. And the next phase is building the VFO, which is a varactitune VFO. And I'm gonna use a frequency counter to help align it up, but you can do it using a procedure using another receiver to line up the VFO. So the whole thing is very easy, isn't it?
KZ2QIQ.
Glenn recognized, KZ2QIQ. Go ahead with your comment, Glenn. Oh, before we do, let's pick up the late check-in. Who was the late check-in? Give me your call letter and name, sir.
This is Frank, N2RSO, and I believe that third company, American company you were talking about, was probably Ramsey.
No, not Ramsey. I can't think of the name. It always escapes me. They make very high-end software-defined radios for the government and amateur.
Kenwood
was the American company. W2OSR, go ahead with
your comment. Okay, Dick, the name that you're looking for is Flex Radio.
You, Bob, Flex Radio, that's it.
Okay, we've cleared up the mystery. You said you had 13 volts. Do you supply the 12 volts, or does it have 110 volt power supply? Rich, go ahead.
Oh, you got to supply the 13 volts. We hooked the regulator up to my 13 volt supply. Heated, it's working.
And it regulates down to some lower voltage to run the rectitune, the VFO, or some other stage. Or is it actually regulating the 12 volts, 13 volts down to some lower number? What is it regulating down to, Rich? Go ahead.
It's regulating down to 12 volts. They call it a regulator and a keyer. It's actually, it goes in with 13.8, it regulates to 12, but it has a keying circuit that, even with voltage applied, there's a resistor they have, you measure voltage, and it should be zero until two wires that are set up in a test setup are touched together. This is used to turn on either the receiver or the transmitter.
Very good. Okay, JXM, we've got you down. Glenn, you wanted to make a comment? Go right ahead. KCQQIQ.
Hi, good evening, Dick. Actually, I was just going to jump in and say that it reflects radio systems with suppliers of software-defined radio. But I think Bob already picked that one up. Back over to you, Dick, and I might have a question for you later on. I have a VHF power that I just put up with a couple of beams, and maybe I have a couple of questions later on.
Okay, tower questions are one of my favorites. Let me make sure the machine resets. Okay. Rich, good information. Thank you for bringing that to us. Joe is the next person who signed in. Hope Joe is still in range. He's mobile. Blank 2 QYW. QYW, tell me what the prefix was, Joe. K2LAW, you got it, Joe.
Maybe I have to buy an outside manual antenna tuner because I'm using a ST450E2 with the built-in antenna tuner. And I'm thinking maybe if I buy an outside manual antenna tuner, it might tune on 40 and 80 meters back to the net.
Okay, yeah, Joe was not coming through the machine at first, although I was hearing him continuously on the input. And he's got a butternut antenna that he says it does not tune on 40 and 80 into his FT450. What's your definition of not tune? In other words, the FT450 ASU rig is tripping out, so the standing wave ratio is too high, and you have some way of measuring what the 40 and 80 meter standing wave ratio of the antenna was, Joe. We're also assuming that you followed the assembly instructions and alignment instructions for the butternut antenna. So give us a few more words on that, Joe. KC2QIW, K2RIW.
I'm using a built-in antenna tuner. Do you think it might tune better with a manual antenna tuner? I have a built-in SWR, and it's kind of high, but I don't remember the exact number on the SWR meter. So I guess I don't have the test equipment, like an antenna analyzer or anything like that. I only can test it on the SWR meter. So I'm thinking the built-in antenna tuner is limited on 80 meters. Back to you.
Okay, Joe, you don't have to tell us what the exact standing wave ratio is. I mean, we're not trying to find out is it 1.55 or 1.65, so to speak. Was it under 2 to 1 or was it above 2 to 1 when you measured the standing wave ratio? Question number one. Question number two, I presume it's a brand new antenna. You've assembled it for the first time. You followed the instructions. And maybe there's even an alignment procedure, like it probably says that if you want to favor the center of the band, like 7.2, megacycles on 40 meters, that you tune this particular width for that particular length and set the set screw. Well, I'm assuming it has questions, answers like that. Did you set it up in the backyard with the right number of ground plane radials? Is there a house nearby, a tree nearby? Give us some extra words as to, are you the first to assemble it? Did you follow the instructions? Did you put it in your backyard? And are there things nearby? And if you could tell us just your vague recollection, was it a 4-to-1 Vizwire or a 1.5 Vizwire that you saw a rough ballpark on either 80 or 40 meters? KC2QIW, K2LIW.
How do you answer that for my knowledge to your question? Yes, I did bought it new, and it's on a six-story flat rooftop of an apartment building with a CPK counterpost kit, and I also grounded it very well. And it was the first time of me putting it together, and I actually put it together in my apartment. I did, you know, of course, I put it together like half, and then when I bought the two pieces on top of the flat roof of the apartment building, I put it all together up on the roof. But it's like, I think it's like, what, about 26 foot, no, like 30 foot high. And the SWR, it is over 2.5 on the 40 and 80 meters. Back to you.
Yeah, greater than 2.5 is mysterious. On a flat roof, it should work like a charm. What is actually providing the vertical support? Did you connect it to a standpipe? Joe, go ahead.
Yeah, I went to, the flat roof has a very strong, I think they're called water pipes, or round vent pipe, water pipe, whatever you want to call it. I bought a 10-foot mast at Home Depot. It's waterproof steel fencing. Mast pole that I mounted the butternut to. I hope I did it right, but let me give it back to you.
Okay, so you wanted some extra altitude off of the roof. You put a 10-foot mast. I'm guessing you screwed it down to a vent pipe or a stand pipe coming out of the roof. The butternut is on top of the 10-foot of mast. The ground plane radial kit, where is that located? Is that coming out of the bottom of the antenna? or is it the bottom of the 10-foot mast? Back to you, Joe. Go ahead.
True. According to the instructions, it's called a counterpose kit. Because my super won't let me, he will not let me lay down a whole bunch of radios down on a flat roof up there. But I used a counterpose kit, and it's on the with the kit and everything. It's on the vertical butternut antenna itself. It's on the bottom of the antenna, not on the mast though. The counterpose kit is not touching the mast. It's actually on the antenna itself.
CPZ with a comment. Yeah, go ahead, 6PZ.
Thanks, Dick. That butternut antenna uses some capacitors, like high-voltage type capacitors. Are you sure you put those little round capacitors, the right values in the right place? It's very critical on that antenna.
When I opened up the butternut packaging and everything, those, what you said, they were already assembled on the coils. They're like ready set on the coils and everything. But to kind of answer your question, when I did the measurements with the coils on the vertical antenna itself, I did it exactly what it said on the instructions. My lucky guess is it's my built-in antenna tuner. Maybe that's what it is. You know, maybe if I use a outside manual antenna tuner, it might just tune really, really good on the 1840 band. But all the other bands is less than a 1.5. All the it's very, very low on all the other bands, like, you know, like 10, 20, and so forth and so forth. And you get really, really good reports out there too.
Hal, are you familiar with this counterpost kit? It sounds a little bit mysterious to me. In other words, his super doesn't want him laying down wires on the roof, so he's got this counterpost kit and 10 feet of mast. And I'm really wondering what's going on there. Are there real counterpoise radials 10 feet in the air clamping down to the roof? Or maybe you're familiar with this antenna. 6DPZ, KQRIW.
RIW, K6DPC.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, they should be perpendicular, right angles to the antenna. What he has to check is make sure that those things are extended out straight, number one. If the capacitors are correct on the butternut antenna, because they may have put a wrong cap on those coils. I've heard that happening. Also, what you could do is add about 15 to 20 feet of coax in series with your antenna tuner coming out of the radio, and you may hit the point where you'll be able to get a match on it. It's cheating, but that's one way of getting around it, because the antenna tuner in those radios can't match more than 2 or 3 to 1 max. That's my only comment, Dick.
Very fine, Hal. He said he's got a Vizwire of 2.5, and if they can take 2 or 3 to 1, you would think it would make it. And by the way, that's not cheating. Every antenna tuner, no matter what brand name, with rare exception, does not cover all possible impedances. If you are looking at a Smith chart, and you look at the total area of the Smith chart, all possible impedances are on that Smith chart. If you plot it by coloring with your crayon, the areas that your antenna tuner can cover, you would see a certain section of the Smith chart it covers, and a certain section it does not. Whenever you add an extra piece of coax cable, what you're really doing is taking the dot that represents your impedance of your antenna at this particular frequency. It's a dot somewhere on that chart, which represents the resistive component and the reactive component. That's what the Smith chart does. It plots everything for you as one dot at one frequency. And if you add an extra length of cable, wherever that dot is, assuming it's lossless cable and the same impedance as the rest of your feed line, you can take a compass, put the sharp point in the center of the Smith chart, put the pencil on that dot, rotate clockwise with that compass setting, and that's what your extra length of cable is doing. And so with the right length of cable, you will rotate your dot into the spot on the SMIT chart where your antenna tuner will easily cover it. And in most cases, that can solve a million problems. It's not cheating, because there's nothing magic about the particular length of your transmission line. That's true in 99% of all the antennas. There are quite a few antennas out there where the old wives are telling these crazy tales on 20 meters will tell you that your antenna is only going to perform correctly if your feed line is an odd number of quarter wavelengths long or an even number of half wavelengths long. They got all kinds of theories along these lines. 90-some-odd percent of those theories are pure garbage, as they say in my town. Anyhow, don't believe it. You can make any feed line, any length, as long as it's low-loss cable, and it's not cheating. It's a good thing to do. So the fact that he saw a 2.5 standing wave ratio is a little bit mysterious. Maybe the instructions giving you enough information in the right places that you can read the values on those capacitors. Hal is suggesting that even though the capacitors were put on by the factory, there's a slim chance they put the wrong values in the wrong places. And if there's enough data in the assembly chart, you can recheck that. Hal also indicated that he thinks the ground plane radio should come out at right angles. In my opinion, that's a little bit severe. Most antennas, if it was most antennas, if they're designed for the ground plane radio, come out at right angles from the antenna, and on the roof of a building where you've got 10 feet of mast coming out of your support structure coming out of the roof, and then the antenna mounted 10 feet in the air, to try to make those ground plane radios, all of them come out at a right angle, would require a whole lot of other 10-foot mast and a whole lot of other support pipes, and that's a difficult thing to do. I don't think you've got to do that, Joe, even though Hal seems to think that. In most cases, if you slant the ground plane radios down at a more comfortable angle, you'll have a minor change on the impedance of the antenna. It should be within the range, though, where the antenna tuner should be able to tolerate that. So once you give us any further words as to what your ground plane radios look like, how they're assembled, and they're probably slanting down at a 45-degree angle to the roof where you've attached them with strings to whatever supports you've got, strings, ropes, or whatever. Correct me on that one, Joe, when you get a chance. Then you can tell us what it all looks like. And another thing you should do is to sweep the 80 and 40-meter band. In other words, even though your antenna tuner trips out, probably in the low-power tune mode, it will not trip out, and you can get a standing wave ratio measurement. And if you made that measurement at 3.5, 3.6, 3.7, 8, 9, and 4.0 megacycles, and make a plot of that, it'll give you a bathtub-shaped curve. And the bottom of that curve basically is telling you where the antenna is tuned. And so maybe you want to use it at 3.5, and maybe it gives you a perfect match of 3.9. That would be good information. And you can do the same thing on 40 meters. So as you can see, Joe, we're giving you a little bit of a homework assignment to do a plot of VISWR versus frequency. And you can do that on quadruple paper. You can make homemade graph paper. Even on yellow sheet of paper, you can do that. It doesn't have to be super accurate. But just even a tabulation, a guy with a sharp eye and a pencil looking at a tabulation of standing wave ratio versus frequency will get a strong clue as to what's going on. So tell us what those ground plane radios look like. Are they slanting away from the antenna, which is mounted 10 feet above the roof? AC2QIW, K2RIW in the TechNet. Wait for the beep.
AC2KEY wire to come in and maybe give us some ideas what's going on.
Very fine now. Let's let Joe give us a couple of words, and then we're going to send it right over to Mel. You got it, Joe.
You're saying about that, I guess I called the servers about it. That will do without the radios. Let's say they have very limited space. They recommend you to purchased a counterpost kit, so you can do it without the radios on that, button up vertical. Don't get me wrong, I'm very happy with it. I'm 20 meters, it works flawless. It works great on all the other bands. I'm just having problems with the 1480, you know? What was the next question? I lost the other question. The mast is vertical too, and the water pipe on the roof is vertical. And I guide it with the special guy, what is it called, the guy rope that they sell. I think that makes it. I didn't have to guide it, but I guided it anyway. So I guess I got some homework to do in the future. Maybe I'll have someone in my interradio club to help me out. Help me out with that 14 meters adjustment that section there.
Yeah, guiding the antenna is a very good thing to do. Good belt and suspenders to make sure it doesn't fall over in a high wind. Because if it did fall over in a high wind or bend the support pipe, which was not made for all that extra load you put on it, you know, 10 or 15 feet of butternut on top of 10 feet of strong mast, that's putting a lot of extra bending moment on that pipe coming out of the roof. And if that did fall over, quite possibly the super would be unhappy with you and start losing confidence. So using guys is a smart thing to do. Mel's going to straighten us all out on this because he's got experience with butternut, if I know him. He's an HF man from way back. K2KEY, K2LIW. You got it, Mel.
This is K2KEY,
Houston.
Well, I put together the numbers
for
vertical, crush craft, hustler, gap, and all. And right off the bat, they tell you at the beginning that you have to select either whether you're going to be on the foam portion of the band or the CW portion of the band, and you can't intermix it. That's the point. Once you select one or the other, you're stuck with this. That the antennas can't be set for one band for CW portion and the other band for foam portion. Now, also, I found that after we put together, we used also that so-called compromised radio kit on one antenna, back on two of them, and on 80 meters, which is quite a big band, you know, there's a lot of territory between 3,500 and 4 megahertz, and the antenna only tunes properly, really, about 75 kilohertz of it, about maybe 30, 40 kilohertz either side of one of the spots where it was set up for. So sweeping it with, of course, with the handheld, what I use, of course, I've got the 88 graphic analyzer, CIA unit, CIA HF unit. So I can look at the whole entire band, basically, and just see where the antenna really was working. And you can see it was really not very much in the way of a broadband antenna once you get to 80 meters. 40 is not quite as bad, but already you can see even on 40 meters it's not going to, you know, cover a heck of a lot of the 40 meter band. So that's basically what we ran into with a couple of putting it together on TakeOver.
Mel, give me a little bit of description of this counterpost kit or counterpoise kit, whichever it is that Joe was describing. Have you ever seen that? Are there real radials on that, or is it, does it come with a 10-foot mast? I wonder if you're familiar with that one. Back to you, Mel.
Okay, I'll describe it. It basically clamps to the main mast of the antenna, the bottom section of the antenna. If the rods, they come out. Now, they've got a couple different versions. One, their rods come out, and they stick these one spot on the rod, one rod, in other words, like four rods, they actually are crossed each other. In other words, you just put two like elements and just cross them. And at the center of the pipe, the vertical, you join them on there. And what they do then, they have an insulator on three of the, I got a picture of how that was. No, it was on one of them. It was an insulator. And the other one, and what they do is they pass this wire around, like out on the outer periphery of this, of these rods. And then at this point where the wire would come together, they actually adjust the wire length at that point. And they give you a piece like as said GAP supplies you with this non-metallic, basically it's that polyester rope, you know, that black paper on rope, I believe they call it, and they use that for dyeing their antennas. They recommend dyeing their antennas, but they sell that kit for, you know, for general use for a number of verticals, Dick. But that's basically what the kit looks like, this counterpoise kit with rods sticking out. They're supposed to be basically horizontal. You can't bend them or anything. They're already, you know, set up for you. You just assemble it over.
Okay, I'm going to need a few more words here, Mel. All right, I've got two long rods, which I put together at right angles. They make a huge plus sign. I make those parallel to the earth. I connect them to the base of the butternut antenna that you bolt on or connect by some means. How long are those rods? There's a perimeter wire going around those, but those rods are nowhere near long enough to be a good ground plane radial system for 40 or 80 meters, where they'd have to be 30-some-odd feet long or 60-some-odd feet long. There's a perimeter wire going around the base of the rod, the tips of those four rods. The four tips of those two rods, if I understand correctly. Are there any other wires tracing off from those as counterpoise? I suspect the answer is no. And that sounds like an awfully small counterpoise system. Roughly how long are those rods, if you happen to remember, a rough estimation, Mel? K2KEY, K2RIW.
Well, the rods are about, they protrude, in other words, from the pipe. Center pipe, they'll protrude out 48 inches in a square, in other words, to form a square. So the rods, that's basically how they come. They're, you know, everything has to be packed, be able to be packed in a box. So they come with two rods, each one. Well, you put them together, basically. You put two 48-inch rods together, and then two more 48-inch rods together. And in the middle, that's where they mounted. That's where they cross together, so it protrudes 48 inches out from the main pipe, and then you stretch that wire around the outer periphery of it, and the wire, the heck that they have on the gap one they had, it's adjustable like a slider that adjusts on the piece of wire that, I guess if you could actually look at it as it's fair wire, fair stranded wire stick, you know, and you slide it there supposedly to get the best result. I moved it around on that antenna, and I couldn't see any really great difference if I moved it 6 inches either way. I really didn't see anything really happening with that counterpoise, any kind of, you know, critical adjustment on it. Basically, that's the way they give you the instructions on how to use that counterpoise. Now, they offer other counterpoises, but this is the one that he is describing, this one where you can't lay down actual radio. I think that's a big part of what changes the whole characteristics of that antenna, over.
Now, what is the recommended length and the recommended number of ground plane radials if the antenna was being mounted directly on my lawn in the backyard? What do you believe butternut requires, Mel? Over to you, Mel.
Make a number of them making the kits. There's one company, I can't think of the name, that's providing the kits for these antenna radio kits. They have a very nice setup for it, a plate that goes down, you know, a stainless plate that goes down with terminals on it, cap screws on it. What they recommend that you buy this wire that they sell. In this wire, in other words, the different length radials, they're clipped for, you know, different lengths for different bands, and each one of them contains, like, a number of radials inside the one, you know, piece of wire. Hard to describe. In other words, you're looking at, you know, a bundle of radials, and they tell you that to put down for each band. They recommend four of these. In other words, each bundle contains for the band, so you put down four of these bundles, and so you'll have four radials basically for each band that go in.
Okay, as I see it now, the ground plane kit, the counterpoise kit, is only four 48 inches out in the four directions at 4 feet, and you've got the equivalent of 4 foot ground plane radios with a perimeter wire around them. That's a non-resonant, very small structure compared to the real normal quarter wave long ground plane radios. Therefore, it sounds to me like you're guaranteed to have a higher standing wave ratio with that kit as opposed to the real ground plane radio installation. Now, that would not make a huge impact if the basic resonator radiator of the antenna was electronically half wave long instead of quarter wave long. I wonder if you've got a guess as to which one of those it is, Mel. Back to you, Mel.
I can put it this way. The way they describe it, the antenna, they basically, of course, it's full length on 10 meters, 15 meters. Basically, it's a half wavelength on 20 meters. So if you look at the height of the pipe, it's about 18 feet. After that, you basically are working with the magic of coils, basically, you know. And you look at those coils, I tell you the truth, when I looked at, that's why GAP has gone another way. They have gotten rid of this business with coils and have gone for those transition rod systems. I think I described that antenna here one time, the GAP system. And but the one he talked about with the coils with the capacitors on there and all, this is basically how they're going to, how they get to 40 and 80 meters, Dick, with basically with the foreshortened quite a bit, especially on 8 meters. You're only dealing with 18 feet of pipe over.
Interesting antenna. I think about the best thing we can recommend for you, Joe, under your application is, first of all, with the low power mode or the tune mode where your radio doesn't trip out and you're able to get a Vizwire measurement, I do recommend you plot Vizwire versus frequency across the band. That's going to give you a strong clue. I can think of various ways you can hang another piece of wire coming off that counterpoise kit and making an improvement in Vizwire on the band. Also, I'm almost positive that even a 2-to-1 standing wave ratio, your built-in antenna tuner is going to tolerate that when you have the right length of the feed line, as Hal was recommending earlier. So don't be discouraged by that. I'm convinced you do not need an external antenna tuner yet. Let's not go there yet. I'm pretty sure your internal antenna tuner is going to do it once we choose the right length of transmission line. Hopefully you've got another piece of coax cable you can add with a UHF bullet connector, if you know what I mean, a female to female, so you can extend your feed line. And a nice way to do it is with connectors as opposed to soldering on another piece, which is much more difficult to make changes. So back to you with some of those suggestions and any other questions you might have, Joe. KC2 QIW, K2LIW on the TechNet.
Hey, Roger, Roger. No, I don't have any more questions or anything like that. I'm going to take your advice and got some homework to do. And, yeah, thank you guys for the help and everything. And I guess we'll just pass it to the bell of the station. And I guess I'm done now, for now, you know. So I guess I'll get back to you guys in the future about this butternut antenna. They got so many verticals out there, I didn't know which one to pick. Either a gap, butternut, or high gain, but I guess I'm happy with it, you know. All right, so this is KC2QYW, Dr. Zen.
One more thing there, KY.
Go ahead, Bill.
As you said, Dick, in the low power position of the radio, let them get to the point where the antenna resonates somewhat, because I don't know what he's talking about, but that is 2-to-1. And you should be able to move either side of that frequency and see a change. Is it improving or getting, you know, worse, the SWR, from what he can determine? Just to confirm that those coils are doing something, Dick, over.
Yeah, Joe, you've got our permission to come back to the TechNet as many times as you want to, later on tonight, future weeks, and whatever. Describe what you've done, what you've seen. We'll keep making suggestions, and pretty soon that butternut will be singing for you on on every one of those bands. Your problem is not insurmountable. We've heard of problems like this before. Each installation is different. You're finding the ways to tune it to your particular roof, your particular layout, and it's going to be singing for you. So just hang in there and just keep coming back and tell us what you see. And good luck with that project. I think the next person with a real question, Glenn said he's going to have one. Let's see. I don't think Mr. JXM had one. Mr. RSO, I think, did have one. Let me find out first. Mr. JXM, did you say you had a question? K2LIW in the SecNet? Maybe not. Frank, N2RSO, I think you said you had a question. You were a late check-in. Go right ahead, Frank, if you want to.
No questions, Dick.
Okay, Frank had no question. He's a late check-in. He wants to be recognized. Boy, we recognized him. Okay. Hey, Glenn, I think you're the last person left with a real question. You can take your own free time. And when it comes to VHF towers, that's one of our favorites. KC2QIQ, K2RIW in the SecNet.
Yeah, hi, Dick. I just had a good one for you here. I just put up a tower, and so far everything seems to be working pretty well on it. I now have three antennas. One is a Cushcraft 7-centimeter beam, a 719B, and I also have a 2-meter beam on top of that one. That's a 13-element beam. That's a 13B2. And the third antenna that's stacked underneath that is a, basically a tri-band beam, 6 meters, 2 meters, and 440. Now, I was only able to get above the rotator about 1 foot of spacing between each one of these antennas. And my kind of concern right now is that, you know, it's right now everything's tuning up, and I'm actually talking on it right now, but I'm not sure if maybe the antennas, maybe they're too close, and they might be upsetting the patterns anyway. Maybe you have a couple of words on that one.
Yeah, 1 foot of spacing. I'm going to start off at the top, your 432 antenna, your 70-centimeter antenna. And if you did say it's a Yagi, a 7-element, or 7-19B, could have as many as 19 elements, but it doesn't matter. Still, it is a Yagi. I'm assuming it's horizontally polarized. And Yagi, first of all, a 432 Yagi is using elements that are about a foot long, wavelength of 27 inches, and 1 foot of spacing to other antennas is a little on the close side. I didn't say it's bad, but it's pushing your luck a little bit. I would have made it a little bit closer to 2 feet if I could have. In the case of the 2-meter antenna, the 2-meter antenna absolutely does not see the 70-centimeter antenna. Assuming the 2-meter antenna is also horizontally polarized, as far as the 70-centimeter antenna is concerned, that's not there. It's transparent. However, the tri-bander, the 6 through 440, it is seeing that. I'm assuming that's also horizontally polarized. 1 foot of spacing on 2 meters to another 6 or 2 meter antenna, you are getting some interaction between those. In fact, you could measure it rather nicely by transmitting into one and measuring the amount of power coming out of the other. It'll tell you the amount of cross-coupling you've got. And by the way, with that cross-coupling, you could, if you want to, put a short circuit and trombone on the unused transmission line. As you tune the length of that trombone, you will be affecting the vertical angle of radiation out of the total antenna assembly. You're feeding energy into both, and depending on what phase angle of reflection you get, depending on the length of your trombone into that short circuit or open circuit, you'll be tuning the elevation. And it would be kind of fun to aim that antenna at somebody who's on the air with a steady signal, horizontally polarized, and operate that trombone and see where the peak and valley is. Again, 1 foot of spacing is quite close. It's not going to burn up, and it's not going to, turn it to crumble and fail. It is, though, at a distance that's going to be giving you some cross-coupling effects. And in the case of that 2-meter antenna, for the antenna that's below it, if you could make that more like 3 or 4 feet, you'd be almost removing that interaction. You are getting some interaction. But you could use it in your favor by putting a trombone in there. And you probably don't have a trombone, but by putting in various lengths of cable into a short or open circuit, you could be getting a trombone-like effect. I think you see what I'm talking about here. The energy is picked up by the other antenna, reflecting back at a particular phase angle, gets re-radiated in the space, and will be changing your vertical polar, your vertical takeoff angle somewhat. Now, it's not going to have a huge effect because there is a step down in the power that's on the power civic end.
Repeater, timeout.
But while you've got it set up that way, Glenn, it would be a fun thing to experiment on and report back to us as to what you see. ATQ, QIQ, B2RW in the deck minute.
Yeah, absolutely, Dick. I'm going to give that a try, but just I think maybe I need to describe the third antenna a little bit better. The tri-band antenna is actually a 5-element 2-meter, 5-element 7-centimeter, and a basically a 3-element 6-meter antenna. The 6 meters is horizontal, but the off the front of the antenna, the 2 meters and the 7 centimeters are vertical. So I was just wondering, really I think the 2-meter, because those elements, from the top of the vertical element to the let's say the boom of that 2-meter horizontal 17 element beam, that's 13 elements, 2-meter. And so it's like 5 elements vertical underneath the bottom, and I've got, and it's actually staged towards the front of the boom, where the other end, the other horizontal antenna, that's 17 elements, runs across both sides of the antenna mast. So it's a very, very long antenna. It's like 12, 13 feet. And the tri-band antenna is relatively short by comparison in the front. So it's really where the director is. It's really just hanging off the front of the beam. But it's really vertical against horizontal. So I was wondering if that might alleviate some of the situations with the clarity, one vertical and one horizontal.
Oh, absolutely. Now the 2-meter 13-element Yagi and the tri-band are 2-meter, which is vertically polarized. They don't see each other. They're cross-polarized. However, the vertically polarized 2-meter element on the tri-bander, how close do they come to the boom of the 2-meter horizontally polarized Yagi? Back to you, Glenn.
Yeah, that's where the problem is. It's about 1 foot of spacing. If I measure from the top element of that antenna to the boom, and right now the closest part of the closest metallic element on the horizontal antenna is about 1 foot, maybe even 13 inches. So it's pretty much close to 1 foot there.
Okay, that's not so bad. The boom of the 2-meter horizontally polarized Yagi, the one in the middle, to the boom of the tri-bander, is that about 3 feet of spacing? Go ahead.
Yeah, I would say it's at least 3 feet, Dick. It's got to be somewhere probably a little in excess of 3 feet.
Okay, you've got a workable arrangement there. That's a workable arrangement. That's not bad. You've got just about the right amount of spacing. You're going to get a tiny bit of detuning on the vertically polarized 2-meter Yagi of the tri-bander, because of the 1 foot spacing. Although 1 foot spacing, that's going to knock down that capacitance a lot. I'm doing this with my hands right now and looking at that, picturing the elements of the 2-meter Yagi, 19 elements above and below its boom, 19 inches. Now, I think you're going to get away with that. I think that's a good arrangement. And all of this cross-coupling I told you about with the trombone, because you're talking about 2-meter horizontal, 2-meter vertically polarized. They're not going to couple to each other. The 2-meter Yagi and the 432 Yagi above it, they're not going to couple to each other. And the 3 foot of spacing between the 2-meter Yagi in the middle and the 6-meter elements that are horizontal of the tri-bander below, with that 3 and a fraction feet of spacing, very little cross coupling there. You've got a good arrangement there. Now, I think you're worrying unnecessarily. As you choose guys on these various bands and swing that antenna and measure the pattern, I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised, Glenn. I think you got a good arrangement. I think you said that tower is, you didn't say, but I'm going to guess it's 50 feet high. Back to you, Glenn.
Yeah, I was hoping to go that high, but actually I'm only up at 35 feet. But right now, compared to where I was on the chimney before, this is a world of difference. I can tell just even pointing it towards the repeater now, where I used to just use the tri-band antenna, which I'm on right now, at the new height, just looking at reception, I used to keep the RF gain at like the 75% mark, and read the repeater at, you know, pretty much full scale on the S-meter on this XPU-47. And now, with the increased height and the other antennas all mounted on there, now I have to be at less than one quarter of the RF dot all the way down on the other end, so I can tell that the signal's strength coming in much stronger now.
Yeah, what you're proving is that altitude is everything. It's a higher antenna than you had before, a better antenna than you had before. A real Yagi aimed at the repeater. Now you're getting some signal strength. I've got a 14-element 2-meter Yagi aimed at the repeater right now, and that's what you're hearing, even though it's a 45-degree tilted, so about halfway between the horizontal people and the vertical people. I'm really happy with that antenna, even though it's kind of a mediocre performance Chris-Craft antenna. 14LD or whatever the dot model number was way back in the dark ages when those things were being sold. Okay, you're going to be pretty happy with that. That 35 feet of tower, is that a crank-up tower or is that a mast? What's the nature of that 35 feet of tower? I presume the mast is at the 35-foot level where it begins and then goes up above that. Is that true, Brad?
Exactly. It's really a mast. It's really 2.5-inch steel pipe that's basically buried into the ground, and then it's supported up against the side of the house. So it goes up about, and then it's reduced in size. So it's basically for about a 25-foot run. It's 2.5-inch steel pipe, welded between the two sections in the center. And then from the 25-foot mark going up another 10 feet, just 2-inch steel pipe, galvanized steel, it's welded there as well. And then I just basically erected it straight up. I didn't use concrete to hold it in because it's really supported against the side of the house with leg bolts, you know, 4-inch leg bolts and 4x4s against the side of the house for the first, say, 18 feet. And then I guide the section from 18 to roughly about 25 feet from the side of the house. To that part of the, actually I have two of them. I did one for HF, and I just finished this one for VHF this weekend. So it's really basically steel pipe, and, you know, with the rotator mounted on top of that, and then there's another, let's say, 5 feet on top of the rotator, with the heavier antennas towards the bottom, the lighter antennas towards the top.
This is either Schedule 40 or Schedule 80 steel pipe, go ahead.
Exactly. I went for the heavy stuff I could find, and I'd say just the weight of the steel was probably somewhere close to 300 pounds.
You and your buddies had to do the Iwo Jima flag raising bit in order to put this thing up vertical. Go ahead.
It was kind of interesting because first I had to dig the hole to bury it in. I had to put support behind the hole, and then we ran roughly some rigging off of the top of the house, and basically the people directing it from the bottom with basically two guiding lines and two drawing lines from the roof was able to carefully, it was only like say up to about the 45 degree mark, which really takes a lot of effort to get it to move, but then from the 45 straight up it went up very nicely.
That's a nice way to do it. You would basically guide all the way and put the right use of block and tackle.